ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम् Canto 9, the beginning of chapter 4, and text 1. I'll read the chapter summary, and then we'll read together text number 1. Chapter 4, Ambarish Maharaj offended by Durvasa Muni. This chapter describes the history of Maharaj Nabaga, of his son Nabaga, and of Maharaj Ambarish. The son of Manu was Nabaga, and his son was Nabaga. And his son Nabaga lived for many years in the Gurukula. In Nabaga's absence, his brothers did not consider his share of the kingdom, but instead divided the property among themselves. When Nabaga returned home, his brothers bestowed upon him their father as his share. But when Nabaga went to his father and told him about the dealings of the brothers, his father informed him that this was cheating and advised him that for his livelihood he should go to the sacrificial arena and describe 2 mantras to be chanted there. Nabaga executed the order of his father, and thus Angira and other great saintly persons gave him all the money collected in that sacrifice. To test Nabaga, Lord Shiva challenged his claim to the wealth. But when Lord Shiva was satisfied by Nabaga's behavior, Lord Shiva offered him all the riches. From Nabaga was born Ambarish, the most powerful and celebrated devotee. Maharaj Ambarish was the emperor of the entire world, but he considered his opulence temporary. Indeed, knowing that such material opulence is the cause of downfall into conditional life, he was unattached to this opulence. He engaged his senses and mind in the service of the Lord. This process is called Jukta Vairagya, or feasible renunciation, which is quite suitable for worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Maharaj Ambarish, as the emperor, was immensely opulent, he performed devotional service with great opulence, and therefore, despite his wealth, he had no attachment to his wife, children, or kingdom. He constantly engaged his senses and mind in the service of the Lord. Therefore, to say nothing of enjoying material opulence, he never desired even liberation. Once, Maharaj Ambarish was worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vrindavan, observing the vow of Dwadasi. On Dwadasi, the day after Ekadasi, when he was about to break his Ekadasi fast, the great mystic yogi Durvasa appeared in his house and became his guest. King Ambarish respectively received Durvasa Muni, and Durvasa Muni, after accepting his invitation to eat there, went to bathe in the river Yamuna at noontime. Because he was absorbed in samadhi, he did not come back very soon. Maharaj Ambarish, however, upon seeing that the time to break the fast was passing, drank a little water in accordance with the advice of learned Brahmins, just to observe the formality of breaking the fast. By mystic power, Durvasa Muni could understand that this had happened, and he was very angry. When he returned, he began to chastise Maharaj Ambarish, but he was not satisfied, and finally he created from his hair a demon appearing like the fire of death. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is always the protector of his devotees. And to protect Maharaj Ambarish, he sent his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, which immediately vanquished the fiery demon, and then pursued Durvasa, who was so envious of Maharaj Ambarish. Durvasa fled to Brahmaloka, Shivaloka, and all other higher planets, but he could not protect himself from the wrath of the Sudarshan Chakra. Finally, he went to the spiritual world and surrendered to Lord Narayan. But Lord Narayan could not excuse a person who had offended a Vaishnav. To be excused from such an offense, one must submit to the Vaishnav whom he has offended. There is no other way to be excused. Thus, Lord Narayan advised Durvasa to return to Maharaj Ambarish and beg his pardon. So now we'll read text number one. Sri Sukha Uvacha Navago Navagapatyam Yam Tatam Bratara Kavim Yavisnam Vyavajan Dayam Brahmacharinam Agatam Sri Sukha Uvacha Navago Navagapatyam Yam Tatam Virita Bratara Kavim Yavishtam Vyavajan Dayam Brahmachari Namagatam Sri Sukha Uvacha Navago Navagapatyam Yam Tatam Bratara Kavim Yavishtam Vyavajandayam Brahmachari Namagatam Sri Sukha Uvacha Navago Navagapatyam Yam Tatam Bratara Kavim Yavistam Vyavajandayam Brahmachari Namagatam Sri Sukha Uvacha Navago Navagapatyam Yataro Yataram Kavim Yavistam Yatatam Maham Brahmachari Namagatam Sri Sukha Uvacha Navago Navagapatyam Bhaktam Yavacha Kavim Bhagam 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 Machayam Magatam Sukha Uvacha Bhagavan Bhagatam Vistam Matatam Vayam Vachayam Agatam Sukha Vacha Sri Sukha Uvacha Savago Navagapatyam Bhavato Vasanam Kavim Yavitam Bhavatam Vayam Brahmacharyam Agatam Matajis
శిశుకువాచ నమో భగవత్పద్యం
శిశుకు ఉవాచ. శిశుగ్రీవ్ గోస్వామి సెడ్, నభగా అపత్యం వాజ్ ద సన్ ఆఫ్ మహారాజ్ నభగా, యామ్ అంటు హూమ్ తథాం ద ఫాదర్ భ్రతరా the elder brothers, Kavim, the learned, Yavistam, the youngest, Vyabhajan, divided, Dayam, the property, Brahmacharinam, having accepted the life of a Brahmachari perpetually, Naistika, Agatam, returned. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, the son of Nabhaga, named Nabhaga, lived for a long time at the place of his spiritual master. Therefore, his brothers thought that he was not going to become a Grihastha and would not return. Consequently, without providing a share for him, they divided the property of their father among themselves. When Nabhaga returned from the place of his spiritual master, they gave him their father as his share. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are two kinds of brahmacharis. One may return home, marry, and become a householder, whereas the other, known as Brihadratta, takes a vow to remain a brahmachari perpetually. The Brihadratta brahmachari does not return from the place of the spiritual master. He stays there, and later he directly takes sannyas. Because Nabhaga did not return from the place of his spiritual master, his brothers thought that he had taken Brihadratta Brahmacharya. Therefore, they did not preserve his share, and when he returned, they gave him their father as his share. Shri Shuku Vacha Nabhago Nabhagapatyam Yam Titam Bratara Havim Yavistam Vyabhajan Dayam Brahmacharinam Agatam. Sukadeva Goswami said, the son of Nabhaga named Nabhaga lived for a long time at the place of his spiritual master. Therefore, his brothers thought that he was not going to become a Grihastha and would not return. Consequently, without providing a share for him, they divided the property of their father among themselves. When Nabhaga returned from the place of his spiritual master, they gave him their father as his share. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnanjana Shilakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances to his lotus feet. So herein, we have a brand new chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, which describes the descendants of Nabhaga, all the way to Ambarish, which will be the main focus of this chapter. Ambarish Maharaj was such a great personality. He was the son of Nabhaga, who came home, even though they thought he was a Naistika Brahmachari, Naistika Brahmachari means one who doesn't engage in sense gratification throughout his life. He's Naistika. He's finished. From the point of becoming Brahmachari, he's finished with sense gratification. But many Brahmacharis, just like in our ISKCON society, many Brahmacharis stay Brahmachari for many years, but ultimately they may become householders and have a family, just like Naikatma Prabhu and so many who were Brahmacharis for 10, 12 years and then decided to become householders. This is a common practice in Vedic culture. So Nabhaga, the son of Nabhaga, had stayed for a long time as Brahmachari at the house of his spiritual master. Many, many, many years. So the brothers, who were all householders, considered that he's not coming back, therefore, as a Brahmachari, he doesn't get a share of the inheritance from the father, Nabhaga. In our Western society, I know one case in particular. There was a household devotee working as treasurer of the BBT when we came in 1988. And a few months after we had come, one of his relatives had passed away, and they left him a big fortune. So he passed out all of his kurtas. I got one dhoti. He gave away his bead bags. I think I got a bead bag. And he also gave away his beads. And he went to pick up the inheritance and seemingly kind of gave up Krishna consciousness. Many members of the community were walking around with his kurtas and dhotis and bead bags. He just left with whatever material necessities he had. So sometimes this is the case when we get some riches. We think that now I've got something worthwhile, which is more important than, what could be more important than this? Krishna consciousness in their minds doesn't compare. But of course, most of us in America especially came from families that had some money. Some were living very opulently in the suburbs of the cities of America. And they gave it up to take up the renounced life of Krishna consciousness. And they didn't find that the money and the sense gratification provided any pleasure. As Bhagavad Gita states, Srimad Bhagavatam states, as Srila Prabhupada would constantly remind us, that this sense gratification and material opulence are flighty and short-lived. But Krishna consciousness is there. It's the real wealth. Someone who's very Krishna conscious and very renounced, they're a wealthy person. Not that person who has a big bank account and lots of amenities with which to enjoy this material world. I can't remember who was giving the class, someone here, and they said they had seen a sticker, whoever on a car, the back of a car, whoever has the most toys wins. In other words, the philosophy is whoever gets the most amenities, cars, houses, I guess children and grandchildren, and all the amenities, whoever has the most is the winner. But actually we see in practical life, and what to speak in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, that this isn't the case. In many instances, people that are wealthy, just like here, they fight over the father's fortune. They fight when the relatives pass away. There's oftentimes court battles. Who gets what percentage? No, he didn't really sign that. You forged that document. And people are fighting, and they're waiting. Most of their life for the death of a loved one, so that they can take on their wealth. They can get the big inheritance. And sometimes the wealthy person, it's happened many times, gives all of their wealth to some charitable society, or even there was a recent case, there were very, very many nice children, everyone was waiting in line. The father had died, and he left everything to the family dog. Nobody got a penny except for Rover. He got all the dough. True story. Because they think, my children aren't worth it. I don't want them to become trust fund babies. So Navaga, he came back from being a brahmachari, and he wanted his fair share. And as we'll see later, his father had instructed him. His father was still alive. It wasn't even after his death. In our Western culture, you have to wait, like looking at the clock. When is that old geezer going to pass away? When is the father that I love so dearly going to go so I can get the house? Myself, I was very fortunate. When my father passed away in 2002, my uncle had gotten, my 90-year-old uncle got his car, and someone else, the nephew, got the computer, and the cash went to my mother, and they gave me a Timex watch that he won, or maybe he bought it from TV, that worked for about 10 days. I took it home from the funeral parlor in Tucson. I had my cheapo Timex watch to remember my father, and I thought, this is appropriate. He's giving me what I'm worth, a broken Timex watch, which basically cost $4 if you paid for it in those days. But many people, they're waiting. There may be some rich relative worth millions of dollars, and they're waiting to divide up the wealth. We have many instances, even in our devotee community, where the parents give some wealth, or they make some bargain. You can get the wealth if you leave Hare Krishna. Go and get a job, go and make money, and then you can have my millions. They make some stipulation in the documents. So in our Krishna consciousness movement, we give the greatest benediction to our offspring. They're not going to get very wealthy. I think at the most they'll get some samosas and pakoras, and maybe some dhotis or saris, old dhotis and saris, a kurta here and there. But they're getting Krishna consciousness. They've been given. They didn't have to wait till death. At their birth, they were given Krishna consciousness by their parents. They're given Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, the path of renunciation. They're given the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is the greatest wealth that one can have. That's actually a fact. We've seen close to our personal family wealthy people who wake up in the morning and drink alcohol and go to bed at night and drink alcohol and tell my children that they hate their life and they don't know what they're living for. And they're worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. Their father is worth 40 paisa, 40 rupees, and he tells them that Krishna is kind and life is good because we're chanting, dancing, eating Krishna prasadam. The great wealth, such a great wealth to give your family. We're not just saying it. That is the greatest. Prabhupada gave us the greatest wealth. But we have to be careful that we follow the process. Just like if one is sick, if you go to the doctor, of course, I don't mean to offend the herbalists, but if you go to an allopathic doctor, they'll describe medicine and diet. They give you medicine and diet. Prabhupada gives this example. And not only do you have to take the medicine, but along with the medicine, you have to follow the diet. For instance, old people know this. If you take blood thinner, you can't eat green leafy vegetables. I think because it makes the blood thicker or maybe too thin. I'm not even sure. But there's medicine, blood thinner, and there's diet. No green leafy vegetables. If you take steroids, for instance, some people have to take steroids for different reasons. Somehow or other, you can't eat grapefruit. If you eat grapefruit, you'll be poisoned and you'll die. I have to take steroids, so please don't put a bushel basket of grapefruits at my doorstep. Of course, if they're offered, I'll pass them out. But and if you have certain diseases, you have to follow a certain diet. No potassium, no phosphorus. So in our Krishna consciousness movement, there's medicine and there's diet. Of course, our diet is Krishna prasadam. We only eat foodstuffs offered to Lord Krishna. And the medicine is hearing and chanting. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smarnam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. One has to engage scientifically. Krishna consciousness is a science that one has to engage practically. We hear and we chant. Just like in the kirtan, we don't just hear and meditate. We go to some yoga studios, and before the kirtan, there's 45 minutes of silent meditation. And everyone's thinking so many things. Very difficult to meditate in Kali Yuga. Even Prabhupada said, what is that? Radharani never sat down and meditated. Prabhupada was laughing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he never practiced meditation. Chanting and dancing, yes. So there's hearing and there's chanting. If we just hear, can you imagine if we're all in the temple room and the process is the temple kirtan leader chants and the response is silent meditation. Not very ecstatic. If everyone didn't respond to the call with response, I don't think I'd go to a kirtan. Maybe for a few minutes, that would be it. Can you imagine? So we have the process. It's science. Hear and chant. Call response. Why? Prabhupada explained. Because when you chant the mantra, when you hear the mantra, then the mind becomes locked up on Krishna. Prabhupada explains that. The mind won't be locked up. The mind will be all over the place. The leader leads, and then for 8 beats, there's no response. What is everyone thinking? Where's everyone's mind? Certainly not fixed on Krishna, unless you're extremely advanced. So there's a science. We hear and we chant. We lock up the mind in Krishna. We focus on the deity of the Lord. We don't just look around during kirtan, socialize, go here, go there. We focus on the deity of the Lord. This was Maharaj Ambarish, as we'll hear later in this chapter. Savayamana Krishna Pararavindayo Vaichamsi Vaikunta Kunanu Varnane Karo Harer Mandira Marjanadishu Shrutim Chakrat Chittasat Katodaye Kamam Charasyena Tu Kama Kamyaya Yatotu Mashloka Janashraya Rati. He was engaged scientifically, very practically. Ambarish was such a great saint. He was a Rajarishi, saintly king. He was so advanced because he applied the science scientifically. Savayamana Krishna, he focused his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. How? Savayamana Krishna Pararavindayo Vaichamsi Vaikunta Kunanu Varnane. We'll hear, it's in this chapter, it's coming up, that he engaged his mind in meditating on the lotus feet. His words were describing the glories. His hands cleansing the temple of the Lord. His ears hearing the words spoken by Krishna. His eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna and places like Mathura. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the devotees. His sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of Tulsi. And he engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasadam and chanting the holy names of the Lord. This was the great activity. Prabhupada quoted this verse of Maharaj Ambarish constantly. He became such a great devotee that when he was cursed, as we heard in the intro, Durvasa went to bathe with his 1,000 disciples and was returning. He was going to take prasad But Maharajan Barish, the time had was passing for the breaking of the Ekadasi, the Dwadasi. And so he took some water. Maharaj Durvasa was very angry. And when he came back, he chastised Ambarish. And ultimately, he cursed him. But Ambarish was protected by Lord Krishna, who sent his, Lord Narayan, sent his Sudarshan disc to chase this Durvasa to all kinds of planets, including Vaikuntha. He ran everywhere. And when he finally got to Lord Narayan and said, please take off this Sudarshan disc that's chasing me, and that's also in this chapter, the Lord said, Sarvo Hridayam Mayam, Sarunam Hridayam Tvaham. Devotees are in my heart, and I am in their heart. They know no one but me, and I only know them. So if you want forgiveness for what you've done, you have to go and beg forgiveness, not from me, Narayan, but from Maharaj Ambarish, the great saintly person, who is saintly, again, by following the science of Krishna consciousness. His legs to walk to the temple, his eyes to see the deities, his ears to hear the kirtan, his mouth to vibrate the kirtan, his nose to smell the tulsi and flowers, his head to bow to the deity. Practically, is a science. Srila Prabhupada has given us this science that Maharaj Ambarish followed. And Maharaj Ambarish became such a great devotee that Lord Narayan himself told Durvasa, when Durvasa tried to harm him, first he protected him, then he told him, you can't be excused. You'll be chased by this Sudarshan disc unless and until Maharaj Ambarish forgives you for the offenses that you committed at his lotus feet. So this is our process. Follow the science. Srila Prabhupada gave us the science of Krishna consciousness. He transplanted the Vedic culture and Krishna consciousness. He didn't change anything. He didn't make things different for Westerners, but he transplanted the Vedic culture in America and after all over the world, and gave us the scientific process to follow for becoming Krishna conscious and making others Krishna conscious. If we follow it very strictly, then we'll make advancement on the path of devotional service. And if we don't follow it, we'll have very serious difficulties in progressing in devotional life. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga.
Yourself?
Wow.